Hello and welcome. You are listening to a very special edition of the Rebel Room. I am Rebel reporter Taylor Byrne with the Las Vegas Sun, and with me today, I am very honored and feel blessed to have with me two tremendous guests in studio from Los Angeles. Just came in, actually. Mother of senior guard Justin Hawkins and arguably number one Rebels fan, Carmen Hawkins. Thank you for being here, Carmen.
Thank you.
And on the line, also from California, I do believe anyway, Sports Illustrated senior writer, Pulitzer Prize winner, and author of the absolutely fantastic book, Play Their Hearts Out. If you haven't read it, go read it immediately, George Dorman. George, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, I'll give Twitter shout-outs before we get into this. You can follow both Carmen and George on Twitter. Carmen is at 31bballmom. George is at George Dorman. George, just like you think it, Dorman, D-O-H-R-M-A-N-N. Go follow him, especially in George's case, if you have read the book, if you want to keep up on some of the kids that you've read about. He does a good job of both just kind of getting out some nuggets and also linking to recently on, I think it's playtheirheartsout.com, just had a couple Q&As with like Demetrius and Roberto Nelson, just kind of keeping up with these kids that if you've read the book, you know so much about. And I guess we'll start with the book itself. George, if you could just kind of for people who, you know, may not know what I'm talking about, just give them, you know, a little bit of an explainer on what this is.
Yeah, you know, it's a book about you know, youth basketball, primarily in Southern California, but it takes you sort of across the country and you see different players. But I focused on, you know, one team of boys, started when they were 10 years old down in Southern California, and then followed them all the way through till they were done with high school. So it's kind of that Hoop Dreams model, with a real focus on, you know, how sort of the commercialization of basketball now and what a big business youth basketball is and what it does to the kids. It's really mostly about the kids and their parents. And one of the kids and one of those parents in the book is Justin Hawkins and his mom, Carmen, who I met, gosh, I think when Justin was 12, he joined the team that I was following.
Is that right, Carmen, about that age?
Yes, that's true.
And actually, when Justin is first introduced in the book, ironically enough, I believe it's when he was with the Runnin' Rebels team. A little foreshadowing of his future there.
Justin started out on a team that was the rival of the team I was following, and sort of the one team in California that could compete with them. And then the coach sort of poached Justin and another boy away.
And so, Carmen, I'll jump to you. You know, when Justin started playing basketball, how much did you know about the AAU or, you know, quote unquote grassroots world and just kind of what it was like? Or was this, you know, a completely new experience for you?
I knew absolutely nothing about AAU ball before we started. I mean, he started playing at Reckon Park, and that was our initial experience. And then, you know, the summer camps, UCLA, Laker camp, Jordan camp, Magic, you know, it's like whatever you could find to keep a very active child busy.
Did he really kind of take to basketball early, and that seemed to be just kind of his sport that it seemed like, you know, that this was going to be what he was going to be doing for a while?
When he started out, he was just an athlete, and so he played all sports seasonally, and then he gravitated more to basketball. Or actually, I got approached by one of the coaches from one of the summer youth basketball, you know, camps that approached us, I think when he was 9 or 10, about playing with the team, you know, playing with the team. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, okay, what's this about? And that was, you know, that was really our introduction, and not being aware at that time that a lot of these AAU coaches would work at, like, the UCLA basketball's, you know, little week-long camp for your 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, or the Laker camp or whatever. And they would come and they'd spot talent at that young age, and then they, you know, then they'd kind of find where you were and show up.
Now, George, UNLV fans are aware of Justin's proficiency on defense, and you know it may be surprising people if you read the book. I mean, that was basically what he was doing well even when he was a kid. Like, was it that evident? Like the first, few times that you saw him, that he was kind of making his game about being a defender.
Oh, absolutely! I mean, he came onto the team. The team was at the time called the Inland Stars, and he came onto the team, and he was clearly it was a team of stars. It was a team of kids who were who would ultimately be top ranked kids across the country. And at that time, when they were 12 years old, were sort of these man-childs and prodigies, and you had these incredible players. So it's absolutely similar to UNLV. I mean, you look at UNLV, and there's these guys who are clear NBA talents, and you look at this kid, and just like you did back then, you say, well, how is he going to fit with all of this? And then he just sort of found this way to fit, and with him, he was just, like, right from the get-go, he was an incredible defensive player. I mean, the coach that I write about was not a good coach. He was not a good mind. But even he could see, man, Justin, man, he's tough. Look how tough he is. Look how he defends. And, I mean, it was just apparent to even the sort of, uneducated watcher of basketball. Look what that kid's doing. Look how he's affecting the game.
And I know from following you on Twitter, it's something you've been campaigning to make Justin, one of the nation's leading glue guys. For those who don't know, can you kind of describe what that means?
Yeah, Seth Davis, one of my colleagues at Sports Illustrated, and who's on CBS, he puts out this list at the end of the year. It's called, his all-glue team, his glue guy team. And it's basically those guys who, aren't the stars, but are sort of holding the team together, right? The guys that are doing all the little things to hold the team together. So I was goading Seth last year and this year that Justin needed to be on that team, and I think I really do believe he should be, especially this year, given the expectations and whatnot. They're going to really need glue guys, and of course Justin's going to be one of them.
Now, I promise my listeners, you're not going to have to listen to me just read a bunch, but I did want to highlight this one section that's fairly early on and just kind of highlights what was different about Justin and Carmen in this group of stars and kids and parents who were, trying to figure out the grassroots world. And so just a little excerpt here. The one player, and he was prefacing this talking about, with the AAU coaches, when they come to parents, they're very quick with all of the success stories, but maybe not so much with the kids who fall short, and they don't go into detail about that. And then here's the excerpt. The one player who seemed safely insulated from the dangers of the grassroots machine, who would remain unscathed should Keller, the coach, turn out to be more harmful than he initially appeared, was Justin Hawkins. The difference between him and the other boys was how his mother, Carmen, handled Keller. Much of what she did was just responsible parenting. She attended every game and practice, always questioned Keller's plans for the team, and monitored who he brought around the boys. But there was shrewdness to her approach. After Justin had been on the team less than 6 months, I asked Carmen what she thought about playing for Keller. She responded flatly, "Joe is going to use my son to get what he wants, and I'm going to use Joe to get what Justin wants." And that seems like the best possible mentality going into these things. I mean, Carmen, how did you kind of come to that realization that, and you mentioned the guys who would go to the camps and just kind of pluck the talent. And George mentioned it earlier. Anybody who reads this knows Joe Keller was not a good coach by any means. It's depressing. I honestly, the first, I read this book 2 years ago before I knew any of the people in it. And I honestly, I wanted to take a shower after every chapter. Like, it's just, it's just disgusting sometimes, but it's also, it's so good. And so I asked, how did you kind of come to the realization that, you guys were going to have to butt heads and make sure that you and Justin got out, as much of it as they were getting from you guys?
Very delicate balance, because this was a team. What Joe would do is when he started out, we first actually played against Joe when Justin was 9. The first AAU team we played on was called a Team Triple Threat, in which Oscar Belfield was on that same team. And when we joined it, we were using what we call the Park and Rec and Park guidelines, which anybody in the, you know, you were placed based on calendar year age. I was not aware of the AAU August to September, however, mm-hmm. September to August kind of thing, which then ultimately meant Justin and Oscar ended up in two different age categories based on that. And we played them, and we played Joe that had the team at a tournament in December of whatever that year was, 10 years after 1990, 2000. And with Oscar and Justin and a ragtag of some other younger kids that we pulled together, we played, got to the championship game, and we were beating Joe Keller's all-star Inland Stars that had Demetrius.
And I think Roberto were probably on the team at that time. Was he not there yet?
Not at that time. It was Demetrius. It was Big Joe. Joe Burton was on there. Chris Cunningham.
Yeah.
And then you had, who's Jordan Finn? Jordan
Finn, who's at Nevada, Andrew Bach, who's at ULT. You had probably Rome Draper, who was a prospect for a while.
And that team at 10 years old, those were some big kids. I think Big Joe was 6 feet at 10.
Yeah.
Would you think, George?
Of course.
Yeah, sure. And with our little 6 ragtag players, we gave them a run for their money because we played defense. And would score, and then they got us in the second half because they fouled Oscar out, and then it was only Justin and then my other son Marcus, who was just there to basically be a break kid, ended up having to play, and he was what, 7 at the time, I believe. So they ended up winning the game, but it was only because of they had a full squad of 12, mm-hmm. and
they just kept running athletes.
But I think that was where Joe first saw and spotted Justin and saw what he was doing to his stars.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, we ended up with running Rebels, which was Gary Franklin's team. And then that team, which was a true match with them, and we were just, you know, we were beating them. And little by little, he would go and get with parents and convince players to leave and come to Inland Stars. And Justin ultimately is like, Mom, I want to play, because he wanted to play with his friends.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Justin, I've heard all these bad things about Joe and blah, blah, blah. And so we just cut a deal. I said, okay, we're going to do this, but it's with the game plan. And that game plan is you get to play with your, you know, with the best of the best. You're going to go in there, but, you know, it's about grades. It's, you know, he had other responsibilities, and if he didn't keep up his end of the bargain, basketball would go away.
Yeah. And one of the – go ahead, George.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Carmen is being a little bit if this word has ever been applied to Carmen before, she's being a little shy about sort of stating her which was, you know, she was really shrewd. I mean, I think in the book, and in a good way, I mean, she, in the book, she was such a dream to find as a character. When she joined the team, it was really hard for me because there were most of the parents sort of all bought in to what Joe Keller was selling. I mean, to me, it was so obvious that he was a BS artist. But so many of these parents had the hoop dream syndrome, and they just couldn't get over the fact that maybe this guy could help their kid get to, you know, to UNLV or to the NBA. And so she stepped in and was just, you know, here, she was a lawyer, and she did what lawyers do, what a good lawyer does. She did her research. So you saw, you know, Carmen knew all the other coaches. She talked to them. She knew other parents. So if Joe was recruiting another parent to a kid to the team who might threaten, you know, Justin's spot on a team or something like that, she knew this. She was doing the research, and it was so rare. But when I was sort of 2 years into the project, roughly, when Carmen and Justin came into the book, and it was such a, you know, it was such a refreshing, you know, I was like, oh my goodness, thank goodness. You know, and I'm like embracing them as a character so quickly. And then Justin became the kid who was the first kid to openly question Joe. So he matured in some ways quicker than the other boys when it came to, because of his mother, when it came to understanding what youth basketball was all about.
So Carmen coming in kind of lets you know that you weren't crazy with your, you know, assumptions of what Joe really was. Like there were other people in the world that saw what you saw eventually.
Yeah, I mean Joe was a life lesson. I mean, basketball, AAU, college, whatever. It's a business. And unfortunately the kids are the commodity in that business. And so what I think I attempted to do was to teach Justin the business side of basketball without, and try not to take his dreams, his hopes, or, you know, all of that away. It's like, you know, this is about fun. You're young. If you make it, fantastic. If you don't, at least enjoy the journey, kind of thing. But also be very clear that this, you know, from the standpoint, whether it was Joe Keller or an person who ran SCA or some of the other programs, you know, Pump and Run, I mean, those were businesses. Those were businesses for the folks who ran it, and I had to understand how they did it through the use of the nonprofit, but they were able to do very well.
That's a good way to put it, yes. Now, Justin, I know he left the Inland Stars before high school. I want to say was it like ninth grade?
It was eighth grade. What it eighth was grade. Is 12 and under, what did we come in? Fifth place in nationals, George?
Yeah,
I think we came. And then we, 13 and under, we went to Memphis. And by then, we had Roberto with us. We had was Darius still with us, or did Darius leave after?
You had Gary Franklin, who's at Baylor now.
Yeah.
And Demetrius, who's at New Mexico. Yeah, Joe had stacked Aaron Moore, who's at Portland State.
Aaron.
And we had stacked the team, yeah.
Yeah. And so we went to Memphis, and we won the 13 and under nationals under some very interesting circumstances.
Yeah. some of the most, like, I think dramatic parts in that, because you get the story, and I won't spoil anything, but the story of the coach that was on the other side of that title game is really fascinating. And then just also seeing if the game, you know, was even going to be played.
Yeah. So it played, we won, we ran, we got back to California. And so we had, at that time, the team, I thought we had a fairly good mix of kids, great parents. And so we went into 14 and under with the attitude that we were going to win back-to-back national championships, whereas Joe had a different agenda, which he didn't bother to share with us. And then we would, I think when the season started that fall, all of a sudden he started bringing in players from around the country to add to our team, and convincing parents to let their kids move to the Inland Empire to play with us. And these were kids that we knew from having been playing against mm-hmm. around the country. And so as I just started watching what Joe would do, and Joe's very disrespectful in how he treated both kids and parents once he decided that he no longer wanted you on the team. He would just he would do things where he would just demoralize kids and disrespect parents. And I watched that, and I would talk to folk, I would talk to parents, and like, you know, and, you know, but you can't control what other people do. So we went to a tournament that was in Portland, and he brought Dexter Strickland out from New Jersey. And I love Dexter. I mean, I've known Dexter since Dexter was 10. Great, you know, great kid. He had brought, who'd he bring from Texas, George?
He brought Roger Franklin.
Yeah, Roger Franklin he brought out, and he was actually trying to convince Roger's parents to let him move out to go to school. And Justin and Dexter play the same position. And I watched him basically disrespect my child by moving him down the bench, you know, with Dexter. And I'm like, okay, what's up with this? Because I'm kind of like the team parent. And
I never would have figured that.
So anyway, I had been holding, you know, as I started watching him change his team, and then also we had gone to New Jersey to play in a tournament that the kid from New York, Lance Stevenson.
Stevenson.
His team was supposed to come and play, and we had gotten to the championship game. I don't know whatever happened to Lance. And instead of him allowing the kids to play in their age group, which was at that time 14 and under, where we would have won the tournament, something went down. I don't know the background, but then all of a sudden now we ended up playing 15-16s.
We played in the high school,
yeah. And we played against who's the kid? Tyreek Evans.
Oh, yeah, that's a. I was just gonna try and think if that was the scene I was thinking of.
Yeah, so Tyreek, you know, so what was happening is, as we were moving, we would play in these different tournaments, and I got to be the fly on the wall, and I just started watching Joe do something, go a different direction. And so for me, what he did in Portland with Justin after I had seen what he had done to Jordan Finn in Ohio, where all of his people had come to see him. And
yeah, that's a cringing
him
one too.
Do the kid from where was he from? Blake?
Yeah, that poor kid. Basically what Joe was doing was, Joe was getting in with Adidas at this point pretty heavily, and he had the ability, because his team won nationals and because he had a shoe deal, which was very rare for team that wasn't in high school, he could recruit nationally, essentially. So he went out and went after Dexter Strickland and Roger Franklin and G.J. Villarino and all these players, and he could bring them in to play for his team. And it was at the expense of these kids who had just won a national title. And so in the book, what you get is this idea that, like, why aren't parents seeing this? Like, Joe's bringing in these guys. Of course it's going to cost playing time for these other kids. But the other parents don't see it. Well, Carmen saw it way before they did. She pulled her kid off the team sort of before the team imploded in the last bit. I mean, the team doesn't exist after, you know, a month or so after Carmen leaves. It's sort of a shadow of itself. So that's really what happened, was Carmen kind of saw the writing on the wall before any other parents did, and she got out of there before it really, you know, hurt Justin.
Were you happy to see them go? Not because, you know, you would lose them for your narrative, obviously, but just the fact that they recognized the situation and got out of it?
Well, I think for you, it's funny. You're thinking personally. You're thinking, like, this stinks. I'm losing this woman who has perspective. And you know, there's a lot of single moms in the book who are sort of absentee. Here was a single mom who was, you know, heavily involved. So it was, you're losing this character, of course, this great foil to Joe Keller. But so that hurt, and then it also hurt just on a personal level, because Justin was one of my go-to kids. I mean, Justin was the first kid. I sort of had a rule that I wouldn't approach kids and ask their opinions about, say, Joe or coaching until they sort of came to me. You know, you didn't want to be the guy who was, you know, suckering 10-year-olds into telling you something. So I sort of just sat back with the kids and mostly talked to their parents. The first part of the book is mostly about parents and coaches. But Justin was the first kid that kind of came to me one trip. It was in Columbus, and sort of said, you know, this isn't right what Joe's doing. Just offered it up in a car ride back from the gym. And so I was losing him, too. I was losing this kid. But I did feel like, man, they're smart. You know, these other people are not seeing it. It's not going to end well, but she's smart. She got her kid out of here.
And then from that, later in the book, there is scenes when Justin commits to UNLV. Carmen and Justin were at a visit, and I believe went to a P.F. Chang's, if memory serves, just outside of campus, came back, committed to then-coach Lon Kruger. And, you know, I talked to Justin recently about this, And, you know, the coaching change at UNLV ended up being for the best for Justin. Wasn't happy in Lon's system, but has, you know, found a place with Dave Rice coming into his senior year now. And I'll just be, you know, curious to start with you, George. I believe last year I saw you ribbing Justin about his grades at one point on Twitter, and I know you guys just kind of keep in touch a little bit, but just what's it like for you to watch, you know, not only Justin, but, you know, all these kids? For Mountain West fans, I mean, the book mostly focuses, or the main character, you could say, is Demetrius Walker, who's at New Mexico, so you'll see him twice this year, just to kind of, you know, track them and see how they're progressing in college, you know, these kids that you've known since they were 10. And it seems like you're in an interesting position.
Yeah, it's so weird. I don't mean to say this to sort of presumptuous with Carmen on the phone, but these are like my boys. These are my, in some ways, my kids. I mean, I've known Demetrius since he was 9 years old, and the same with some of the other boys. And I'm particularly close to the three of the four main characters in the book are Demetrius Walker at New Mexico, Roberto Nelson at Oregon State, and Justin. And these are boys that, I mean, I hate to say it, but I feel like they are family. I feel like they are, to some degree, children. And, you know, in the case of say, you know, Demetrius, I'm probably the most stable, I'm the most consistent male figure in his life for the last 12 years. You know, I'm the one guy who's always there. His father's in prison. I mean, So I have a really strong. I mean, it's comical to watch me watch their game on television. My wife will leave the room because I'm the guy. You know, I'm a journalist, and I've been a journalist since I was, you know, in college, and I've always been taught, you know, to
cheering in the press box.
Yeah, I distance yourself from these things, and I am incapable of not instantly turning back into a fan. And it's probably the only thing that I'm that way about. I mean, I can, you know, the Giants can win the World Series. I live in San Francisco. I grew up being a Giants fan, but I have a distance from that. But with the boys, I don't, and I'm a fanatical sort of, you know, fanatical supporter of them because I've been with them for so long, and just also knowing what each of those boys, you know, went through, and what
the
families went through.
Carmen, you know, Justin's coming up on the senior year. We're actually recording this Wednesday. They're about to play Dixie State, so we're going to get out of here soon for that. You know, just what do you want to see out of, you know, the season? Do you focus when you're watching a game? And obviously you want them to win, but are you like George, where you're just kind of losing it watching it, or do you maybe only do that for Justin? You know, kind of what do you like watching a game, and what are you hoping to see this year?
Well, you know what? I'm like George. I actually kind of consider all of the boys my children. Mm-hmm. They're my sons by another mother, and so I'm looking for success in each and every one of them. You know, Justin, you know, he's coming to the end of the college career, so I want this to be, you know, the best experience for him. When he committed to Lon, which was the end of his 10th grade year, he came with the commitment to get UNLV back to its glory years and to win a national championship before he leaves. So he won't admit that to you, but that's, you know, because this is his last hurrah. It's do or die. And so for him, it's one game at a time. It's always, you know, it's like, let's take care of tonight, and then we get past tonight, and then we move on to the next. And that has kind of been the attitude how we've won in the past. And before coming to UNLV, I mean, Justin has a winning history. I mean, his history of winning and winning championships, you know, we go back, as I say, from Wreck and Park.
Yeah, there's a photo in the book, tremendous, by the way. Justin looking super cute as like a, what did we say, nine at
yeah,
that
he was,
age?
He was nine.
And got a balloon tied to his right wrist that I'm pretty sure is Tigger the Tiger. So that's awesome.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, you start for him, you win a minor city championship, two major city championships, and two junior city championships in both football and basketball for Los Angeles Rec and Parks, which is pretty huge because if you look at the kids who are there, a lot of them are playing D1
ball. Yeah, so there's probably a lot of talent in that area.
Yeah, I mean, so you have that whole history, and then both with Running Rebels and with Joe Keller, you know, winning, then winning, you know, a national championship with AAU, almost winning another, even though he left Joe and we went to the team that Justin Cobb's dad was coaching, that we were almost there, and one player kind of blew it for us, but we're not going to mention his name. But, you know, I mean, but for him to join a team at the 11th hour and for them to get to the quarterfinals of 14 and under, you know, Compton Magic, that whole history.
And he's built up a history where anything less than winning it all is.
Yes, yeah, I mean, yeah. And yeah. So that expectation. And so now this year with the talent that we have the ability to go far. But it's about one game at a time.
You would make any coach proud with that cliche. George, I think preseason predictions for the most part, especially this early before a game has even been played, are mostly useless. But I'm still going to ask you, you know, what do you see UNLV doing this year?
Oh, man, I go back and forth on them. I mean, I really think it's all really – it comes down to Anthony and Justin in some regards and how they're going to lead from the point, you know, especially Anthony. If Anthony is a really efficient point guard – there's just no way that UNLV is not good. I mean, they just have so much talent, and I think Rice will find a way to get everyone make everyone happy. He did it last year. I don't know why he wouldn't be able to do it, you know, this year. So, to me, there's just this sort of muted excitement because I know that there is the pieces there to be, you know, that top sort of eight team, you know, but you know. Will Anthony do that? Will Justin support? Will, you know, some of the freshmen work out? I mean, there's always, every team has those ifs. But I think they are, you know, a Sweet 16 team. I think that is just a given. The question is whether things come together and they can be an Elite 8 team or more.
Yeah, I can tell you, in town, the excitement is not muted. They are calling. they want another Final Four banner, and they will accept nothing less. Never mind the fact that half the rotation has never played a minute for UNLV before, and you've got all kinds of questions. But you're right, Ian. There's so much talent, and you know, with that comes just a lot of hype. And I'm as guilty as anybody for that. I've written too much about this team, following them and from the Canada trip, all the off-season talent that they added, all of it. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. And, you know, I think particularly for a kid like Justin, he's already got his degree in 3 years, working on his public administration master's now. And you both know this, and I knew it a little bit, but we had a sit-down interview where we were saying, Justin just talks differently than most people. You know, he has grander ideas than most people I've ever encountered, and I know, you know, a lot of credit, you know, goes to Carmen for that, but it's just he's every bit as good of a basketball player as he is a person. At least it seems that way. We'll see how, you know, how it plays out and everything. I'm very excited for the season start. I know both of you are going to be on the edges of your seats for every game. George, are we going to see at any UNLV games this year?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm still working on which games. Definitely probably New Mexico, so I can see Demetrius as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I want a prediction from Carmen, which is, is your son going to shoot 62% from the free throw line again this year? Justin lost a bet last year. He hasn't paid up. But we had a bet when he was really struggling that he wouldn't shoot above, like, you know, 60% for the rest of the season, and he didn't. He missed, like, you know, two or three or something. So he has to wear what's-her-name's jersey. It's a female basketball player at Notre Dame, a really good one, which is my alma mater. He has to wear his jersey one day to school. He hasn't paid up on that yet.
See, the lucky thing for him, he's not on campus all that much anymore. with the graduate courses, you don't have to be there nearly as much.
He told him he had to take a picture of it and put it up on either Twitter or Facebook or something. Like I want to see him in her distant Skylar Diggins. I want to see him in his Skylar Diggins jersey for the world to see.
I think we all want to see that. All right, George, Carmen, thank you both very much for joining me. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We're getting ready for the season, regular season, Monday night, November 12th, Northern Arizona. Supposed to be a sellout. I think as we're recording this, there's only about 800 tickets left. So it's, you know, going to be an exciting season in Las Vegas. Justin is one of many reasons why, and I just wanted to kind of dive into it. If you have not read the book, what are you doing? Please go get it right now. Play their hearts out. For some reason, it is, and this bothered me, the book is not at the local Barnes & Noble, which infuriates me.
Come on, Carmen. What are you doing to me, Carmen?
Well, you know what? I downloaded it. It's available on the e-reader right now at Amazon. So I downloaded it to my my tablet. But you can, if we get enough orders, they'll bring back the hardback. But it's now in paperback as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Probably with updated stuff on everybody, I would imagine, right?
Yep.
All right. So go get that. It is easily one of the best sports books in the past 10 years. But honestly, you don't have to be that into sports to get it. It's a lot of good character stuff. And be prepared to take a shower in between every chapter because it's... Oh, man, Joe. There's actually, just the last note here, there's a guy in my intramural basketball league who I could have sworn at first was Joe Keller. And I went so hard at him in the paint. I just wanted to take it all out on this, you know, lookalike here. But thank you again both so much. Hope you enjoyed it. Rebel Room, LasVegasSun.com. Follow us all year, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.